Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over is very much appreciated. But today, we are joining you, as we promised earlier in the week and last night after our Clippers recap with the Suns now falling to 4-17 on the season. We're bringing our mailbag back for the first time, I believe, during the regular season. I think we did one the preseason was the last time we did in October. So it's a good time to bring it back with the Suns sitting atop the reverse standings, and also the Suns inexplicably still not having a point guard on their roster. We already touched on Aliakobo from last night, but outside of Aliakobo's one breakout game, the Suns still haven't addressed the point guard need. But Brendan, there's so many questions we've got in, so I appreciate you guys over the past few days sending those in over at Locked On PHX Suns. But I think the first question we should get to, I believe, I have one on my personal mailbag that I put on the account. You have, I believe, three from your mailbag that you put on the Twitter account. So this Markelle Fultz is the hot topic. I think we should start with him. So I'll start with you just giving the guy the shout from your mailbag about the Markelle Fultz situation, and we'll dive in there.
Yeah, there were that was pretty much all anybody wanted to talk about, which is understandable. I think that's true for the entire NBA at this point. But the main idea, obviously, is kind of what the structure of a deal would look like. So the red god Leo asked, if we trade for Fultz, what kind of power forward would we be looking at? I think he's kind of asking long term there. We had another at Juan with a bunch of numbers, Kermit the Frog avatar here. What would be a trade scenario for Markelle Fultz before December 15th? So a lot of different people coming at it from a lot of different angles. I think one that we've already talked about a little bit that makes sense is Trevor Ariza, something structured around him for Fultz or just straight up. I think that makes some sense for them too. Philadelphia is going to want to maintain cap space. I think that's been the one thing constantly that everybody seems to agree on. So Ariza does make a ton of sense for them more than somebody like TJ Warren or some other guys, maybe Troy Daniels is the only other player I could think of in that vein. But I think the best place to start would maybe be outside of Ariza. And I think that's what Juan was talking about. What would be a trade scenario for Markelle Fultz before December 15th? Because I think we have beat the dead horse plenty here, knowing that this team needs an answer way sooner. And, you know, that's only 2 weeks away now because they've already let it last too long. But if the Suns were to make a deal for Fultz before the 15th of December, what do you think that would look like?
I think for me, I'll let you respond back once I'm finished here about this point, but I think Trevor Ariza, as far as he goes, if he's included in a deal past December 15th, I don't think the Suns need to include the Bucks pick, but no. If it's before December 15th, I think it's a situation where I believe that it could be Dragan Bender, Troy Daniels, and the Bucks pick, and I think that gets you actually really pretty close, in my opinion, because they actually need a Troy Daniels. I thought this entire time before Kyle Korver was traded to the Jazz this week that Korver would be a guy that the Sixers would go after the filler shooting need, but that's still a huge hole in their roster, and Troy Daniels still is getting DNP CDs in Phoenix. So maybe they just take that expiring shooter plus a utility big man in Dragan Bender, and maybe they could revive in their system, who knows, but get a former top five pick, a win-now kind of piece in Troy Daniels who can help you win a game off the bench as a shooter, plus a future top 25, probably a low 20s pick. I think that's enough for a guy who it seems like they're desperate to move on from in the system. And before December 15th, that's probably the most realistic bet they have outside of Ariza.
Yeah, I don't think Markelle Fultz is worth a first round pick at all, even knowing that the Bucks pick is not going to be incredibly valuable. It'll likely convey in 2020, obviously, at this point. We've talked about that before, but I don't think even a bad first round pick is what it's going to need to be to get Fultz at this point. I think his value is really plummeting, and I think the real way to put it in perspective for me that I've been coming back to, I think he has all the upside in the world still because it's only his second season, and because it does seem to be something really like, if he overcomes his shooting hurdles, I think everything else is kind of there still. You know, he's not a train wreck of a player. But the thing that I keep coming back to is with this taking it into their own hands of his team, so to speak, just his agent and him and whoever else is kind of involved in that decision, you could trade for the guy and have him decide he's not going to play basketball for you. And I think that that most recent development with him going to see a specialist in New York on Monday, to me, that was kind of the thing where it really put in perspective to me, like, how risky of an investment it is and how much that means his value is going down. So I honestly feel like if, you know, Troy Daniels, if it wasn't going to be Ariza, if it was something that they wanted to do sooner, or they just felt like they wanted to keep Ariza for longer or for the entire season, the Suns, I think Troy Daniels and maybe their own second round pick even could be enough, because I think Philly actually could use Daniels.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think we're kind of in agreement there. The Bucks pick might not be exactly what they need. Maybe just a second round pick, or maybe just Ariza. Excuse me. Maybe if just Ariza straight up with no picks attached could be enough, because Ariza is actually a super valuable piece in the Sixers system. We'd be starting right away alongside Butler and Embiid. But for me, I wanted to ask really quickly on Fultz as well, Brendan, because I think this is a point that people are overlooking, is that if the Markelle Fultz situation doesn't go so well in Phoenix, if they did trade for him, let's say they trade from around Christmas, so they'd have exactly between the end or middle December to the end of the season in April, because we know the Suns are making the playoffs at this point, unless some E60 type of story happens with them doing an all-time turnaround. But I think that really, if you think about it, you have 4 months between December and April, and then if it doesn't work out, Markelle Fultz still has these yips pretty bad. If he's not even playing in your system and he's just a guy sitting on your bench, that's almost a $9 million expiring contract you could use in a trade this summer to fill out some salary. And if in case of a deal comes up for a point guard, let's say like a Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley or a Drew Holiday, if Anthony Davis asks out, I think that makes a lot of sense to use him in that kind of scenario. Or if that's not the case, you just decline his fourth-year option. He's only here for a year and a half at most. So I think it's a good idea just to do a 4 to 12 month thing with Fultz and just see what you got. Because at this point, I don't know what else they can really do.
Yeah, I agree. And I think all things considered, the Elfrid Payton deal looks bad in hindsight because he wasn't good at all in Phoenix. But at the same time, like, it would be a similar deal to that. You know, it would be just give up a very small asset just to take a chance on somebody, see if he clicks with the core, if he grows as a player in limited time in Phoenix, if you maybe in this case, the training staff that is so well renowned can kind of get a look at him and fix some of what's going wrong. All of that stuff, you just give yourself a chance to do that at a very low price. I don't have a problem with it at all. But moving to what the Red asked, just to kind of include that a little bit, if he was to come here, Fultz, and if it maybe went even mildly well and I wanted to keep him at least through the rest of his rookie contract or so, what kind of power forward would be the most ideal? He says, you know, Jackson, Warren, or Bridges, or do you go elsewhere? Kind of how would you build the team around that type of core? If you assume Fultz is maybe even getting to a passable starter level and then Booker and Ayton are there, kind of what would you go about doing them with the rest of the roster?
I think for me, it would start in free agency. Let's just include the draft pick as well, because I think that's quickly becoming one of the more valuable assets in a trade, or as far as including their core and improving it.
Yeah, he mentioned Zion as well. So,
yeah, either Zion or even, do you think Cam Reddish could play? I know this is a little draft talk here, kind of getting away from the question here, but do you think Cam Reddish could play the four? Because he makes a lot of sense in that. But getting back to his point, I think a guy like Zion or Reddish in a draft, or someone like Nikola Mirotic in free agency, makes a whole lot of sense to throw a lot of money at him. Because as we know in the Sun situation, it's going to take a lot more than people realize for free agency to come here at the current moment. So I think Mirotic makes sense there, but even keeping TJ Warren to stretch four, because he's shooting 45% from three and it's still going up. So, I mean, unless TJ starts not shooting the ball well from three, I think he actually might be the guy all along that fills that stretch four.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think at this point you don't move away from that. You have some depth there too. If Bridges does grow a little bit into his body and handle that position a little bit better, I think drafting somebody that's maybe like a 3-4 hybrid does make some sense in this draft. That's obviously kind of a unicorn type of player in its own way, just like you're hoping for with DeAndre Ayton. Those guys don't just grow on trees, but if you could kind of target, there are some players who fit that mold. Sekou Doumbouya from France is one guy who could be kind of around the range the Suns hope to be drafting if they do improve in the second half of the season. But I, yeah, one other guy that the Red actually pointed to in got into a little conversation with other tweeters on his question is Bobby Portis. That one was interesting to me. I don't know if I really love bringing that guy into a locker room that's trying to grow and develop a culture, because I don't know if we can really trust that situation outside of Chicago. It's going to be a big kind of risk, I feel like, whoever does take a chance on him. But I think that type of player does make a lot of sense. So Portis might be somebody to keep an eye on as well moving forward. But what's the next question you want to hit on your thread?
Yeah, for me, it actually turned into, I'm looking at my questions a lot more further. There's only about two or three actual questions in here, because four or five were actually about Markelle Fultz. So I'm glad you hit on that first. But I'll go to Philip Scott SD, and then I'll also combine in here Awkward Fina. Those two guys kind of, I want to combine those questions together because they make a little bit of sense. First, I'll go with Phil's question, which says, with the development of Mikal Bridges, will the Suns use Trevor Ariza as a trade chip to get a point guard? Let's just not include Markelle Fultz in there after December 15th. And then Awkward Fina says, I thought this before they turned the corner that they seem to have turned it, but what happens when the Suns trade for a point guard? Let's just an example, Brennan, let's say they use Ariza a point guard. Let's say when the Suns trade Ariza for a point guard and all their problems aren't magically solved. Do you think those, let's just combine those two questions. Let me get your thoughts immediately on that.
So basically, what happens if they do upgrade the roster and it's still not good enough?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, what if the Suns get a point guard here, like using Trevor Ariza's contract, but still they're not winning games?
Well, I mean, I think people should prepare for that. I think this team is not a playoff team. It's not just a point guard. Obviously, we think that would be the best place to start from the front office's perspective of getting an upgrade at that position, and you expect that to solve a lot of their problems. But at the same time, I mean, really young team, really shallow team, even with a point guard upgrade, you're still not really solving that much of a problem. You still have, you know, Jamal Crawford as a backup playmaker. You still have Josh Jackson and his inconsistencies playing big minutes. You still, at that point, probably only have 9 or 10 guys you really trust. And even then, it's going to go in and out on a given night because of how young the roster is. So I don't think the team's going to start just being good or even, you know, playing at an above 500 level. Obviously, the schedule will help that. But I think the real reason there's such an urgency to make a deal like that is because of the way it's affecting the rest of the roster. You want these guys to be able to develop. You want to kind of see what you have in some of these players and what they're going to be able to do together. And not having a guy to be able to run things right now is pushing those other players back, from Mikal Bridges to DeAndre Ayton, even to Booker himself. So that's really the reason that I feel like it's so urgent. So, I mean, I think that they probably won't win. Now, if it's next season and there's still not much of an improvement, I think, you know, you have another summer, and that's part of what the last guy was asking too, to kind of build around that, depending on what point guard you get. But if you're going even further than this season and it still hasn't gotten better, then you really have to start looking at what kinds of mistakes you might have made in the drafting of this young core and whether you move on from it. But this season, I think it's actually probably likely that they don't start winning right away.
Yeah, I'm actually square on in agreement with you there, Brennan, because a point guard is not really going to fix their problems. But going back to Phillip's question for a second, because I just found it a little interesting. Let's just keep Markelle Fultz out of it, like I said earlier. But for the development of Mikal Bridges, let's say he gets out of his funk here in 2 or 3 weeks, which seems plausible out of this summer, because he's just too good of a player. He still impacts the game defensively, but the shooting's not there at the moment. Let's say December 15 comes around, Trevor Ariza is on the trading block immediately by James Jones. Outside of Markelle Fultz, who are some names that Suns fans should keep an eye on, and which teams would really use Trevor Ariza? Because I think for me, teams like Milwaukee make sense, Indiana makes sense. Really, those fringe playoff teams who think they're one piece away from going against the elite teams out east or even in the West.
Yeah, do you think Indiana would do Corey Joseph for Trevor Ariza?
I think I've been talking, actually, because as you guys know from Indiana, I've been talking to a few people out there and like that watch a lot more Pacers games than I do right now, and I've also talked to a few writers. I think Darren Collison might be more available than Corey Joseph is.
That would be an upgrade, right? I don't really think you can complain too much when you're getting a starting caliber guy, which starting caliber guy it is, but I would prefer Joseph. I think either way, I don't think just Ariza is getting it done.
just for one of those point guards. Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I feel like you'd have to give up the Suns would have to give up a little bit more to make that work, and maybe the Bucks pick, but both of those guys are expiring if I remember correctly. So that's kind of a lot at that point too. You're giving up your own rental for their rental, and you're giving up a whole pick. Maybe if they were willing to do the Suns' own second and Ariza for one of those two players, and you kind of feel like neither one of them is an all-star, so maybe they would re-sign if they felt like it was a good situation and they were going to get playing time. If that was the deal, I think I'd be okay with it. But I don't hate Collison.
Here's one deal that I've gotten sent to me a few times before, and I've actually looked into it more myself because I think he's a really good fan of Devin Booker long-term. And getting him in maybe around this time makes a lot of sense. And that's Malcolm Brogdon. He's been starting every game as shooting guard this year for the Milwaukee Bucks, but he is a point guard. He's a combo guard who can fit right alongside Devin Booker, take his defensive assignment and do well. He's a career 50% shooter on catch and shoot threes, which is an amazing number. But what about taking on the salary of John Henson, who makes $10 million next year, who's currently injured right now, but
he's out for the whole season.
Oh, he is? Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they said they hope he can be back for the playoffs.
Well, yeah, let's just say they add on his contract then, I guess, $10 million plus Malcolm Brogdon, which is he's only making about $1.5 million right now. But then the Bucks get Trevor Ariza, who they could put alongside Giannis and Bledsoe and Middleton and play him as the four.
Yeah, that seems interesting, the idea of taking salary from them. But let me look quickly. I just want to double check. So the Bucks could create $12 million in cap space next year, but that would mean they're renouncing Middleton and Bledsoe. So they can use Middleton's low cap hold, and they have a big decision coming on Bledsoe. But I mean, getting off of Henson and replacing him with Trevor Ariza's massive cap hold doesn't really create cap space for them next summer. So I don't know how valuable that is. You only really do that deal if you're in Milwaukee's position, if getting rid of that player would actually allow you to add talent. And I don't really think that that would. So I think that's part of why it's so tough with the Bucks, because Ariza would be an incredible fit. He would just completely eliminate guys like Tony Snell and probably DiVincenzo from their having to even think about those guys and on their playoff rotation. But I don't really think that there's much else the Suns would give up, and Brogdon for Ariza straight up is never going to happen. Brogdon, like you said, is starting for them, and they're the best team in the East.
One more point I wanted to ask you before we go to our segment here, the mailbag. And I've gotten this a few times off my Twitter account in the mailbag, but I think it's just interesting because some fans have said that if they're going to trade Ariza to the Suns, they should focus on getting their draft pick in the future instead of getting a point guard back, because that says if they get a future draft pick, like let's say like a contender like the Pacers or the Bucks get their first round pick this year, which would be like 25, 26, 27 in that range, or maybe a 2020 first round pick instead and push it back another year. But I think they're saying that because they want to have another asset and the ammunition as far as trades go, because they see a name like Anthony Davis coming up. They see names around the league who, with the Suns draining their assets a little bit, using the Mikal Bridges trade with the Miami pick and the Bucks pick now, really losing value over the past year or so. They feel like the Suns really need to get additional picks now, because if they are going to eventually do that home run swinging trade, which still hasn't happened in 4 or 5 years, you think maybe James Jones does it soon. Maybe he needs more assets than we all thought initially.
Yeah, I agree that the trade looks unlikely. I think that's just the reality. I think at this point you're trying to buy decently low on somebody that you feel like can blossom into, you know, an above average starting level player, either at point guard or power forward. I think the opportunity to even be competitive in a negotiation room, if you will, just the trade deadline or free agency negotiations for a superstar level player in a trade, that's gone in my mind. I don't think the Suns will ever get there again, because unless Mikal Bridges this rookie season just goes even better than it already has, and the Suns act quickly and use that high value to get somebody, and even then they don't really have much else to package with him. So I think the fact that Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, and Josh Jackson all underperformed, I think that opportunity is gone. So I feel like you maximize what you have now, try to build through Booker and Ayton, add pieces that make sense around those guys, and just kind of work with what you have moving forward.
Yeah, that's kind of a sobering feeling if you're a Suns fan out there who still had that thought, because I agree with you, Brandon. I think that that time has passed. If they were going to do it, it should have been this past summer for a guy like Kawhi Leonard. Even Jimmy, I think Jimmy Butler was their last chance of doing that.
Should have been in the summer of 2017 with Kyrie Irving is really, I mean, you know, like that was, I think that was the summer, because Jackson's value was so high at that time.
We can have a whole episode, Brandon, to be honest, like just thinking about that decision in 2017.
Yeah. When bring Dan Bickley on. Like that would have him yell into the void with us.
Oh man, that would literally go from, that would change everything for the Suns probably the next 10, 15 years, because there would be no DeAndre or Mikal Bridges most likely. But before we go any further on today's episode, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account at Locked On NBA Net. I think, as I've told you guys countless times before, it's becoming one of the more valuable Twitter assets out there as far as getting news immediately about your favorite NBA team outside of Phoenix. I know you guys enjoy our coverage, but there's so many great writers and podcasters on the Locked On Network that are not getting enough shine locally here in Phoenix, so we're going to shout them out, like John Corrales, Adam Mares, David Locke, who runs the entire Locked On Network. Make sure to go follow those guys, but also make sure to go follow at Locked On NBA Net, because I follow them, Brendan follows them. Make sure you do, because you get news right as it happens, and you're right. You don't really miss any news as far as it happens along anything in the NBA. So make sure to follow at Locked On NBA Net.
I want to also tell you guys about a new sponsor here on the show. That is Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. Now, I know in Phoenix, it's not always cold enough for stuff like this, of course, but one of all of our favorite things to do, as I know from growing up here, is to go up north, go to Flagstaff, go to Prescott, as D'Anthony Melton's been doing. And maybe he should try out Action Heat. Maybe I should pitch this to him. But all it is the same typical coats and things like that, jackets, socks, gloves that you're used to, but it's powered by a 5-volt lithium ion battery, and it can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees. Now, these batteries last up to 12 hours on each charge, and the batteries themselves in the clothing can be used to charge your phone and things like that too. So it's kind of a dual purpose utility here, but the main purpose is to keep you warm when you go outside during the winter. It's available in men's and women's and has great new styles and models just released for this winter season. All you're going to need to do to take advantage of our offer of 20% off your entire order is go to actionheat.com/lockedon. That's all one word, Locked On, the name of this show. And you can check out everything that Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20% off of your order. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. All right, moving quickly, I guess, here, because we got a little bit caught up on Fultz. That does seem to be what you guys got the most interested in here, though. One that I think is interesting, just because it's a guy we have pretty much ignored this whole season because he hasn't been in the rotation, Alvaro Pensabane, I don't know, at APM34 asks, what would have to happen for Bender to have a shot at playing meaningful minutes? We did see it once this year when Ariza was out, or maybe it was when TJ Warren was out. And obviously that was when Ryan Anderson was already out of the rotation. Bender only played a few minutes though, even that night. So is there really anything outside of a major injury that would get him to that point in your mind?
I think it's a quick and simple answer, Brennan. I think it's no. I think the team is ready to move on from Dragan Bender. I think they kind of ready to move on from last year. I think they were trying to probably trade him alongside Marquise Chris in the offseason, and it didn't work out for them. But you can just tell he's not in the rotation. He's literally the last guy in their rotation on their roster. So I don't think he's going to see any playing time anytime soon, unless drastic injuries or everyone got sick on the roster for some reason. He really got some significant playing time. But I'm glad you brought up Bender, because I had a question from Louise at Louise Oschiavo 11, who asks, is it time to move Dragan Bender to the G League? And so that means for Dragan to even go to the G League, guys, that means that the Suns have to cut him, hope he goes through waivers, and then signed to a G League contract. So I actually think I'm in agreement with Louise that they actually should do this, because I think they're ready to move up from Dragan Bender anyways. If someone actually picks him up, then that's their own doing. I don't think the Suns are really going to care. But if they do get him through a G League contract, why not see him against NAZ? And if he sucks against NAZ quality talent, then he's not going to be in the NBA anymore.
Yeah, I get, but couldn't they just assign him to the G League like they are with Anthony Melton and other guys?
I feel like it's different, though, because he's not a rookie. I might be wrong, though.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works just because it's so rare. But, I mean, I think people are talking about the same thing for Fultz. I think, like, you could assign anybody there. Now, they wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't work the same way. You wouldn't have the same rights to them and be able to operate the same way as somebody like Juwan Evans. But I'm pretty sure that just like he did as a rookie, he could go play there. I mean, either way, to me, they've made their decision. So I feel like in my mind, even if he was great against G League players, that wouldn't change much. The problem is he had 82 games last year. He played in all 82 games, started a good majority of them, played a lot of minutes, and showed very little, and then had a whole summer with a better system that suited him and still showed very little. So I think that they've made their decision. To me, the biggest thing is if he couldn't make it work under Igor Kokoschkov, who's a tailor-made coach from obviously coming from Europe, but also running an offense that really could use a player exactly like Bender. If Bender can't succeed in that situation, in that environment that they created here in Phoenix this summer, then there's nothing the Suns can do at this point. I think it's just, you know, let him find a different situation if he can find somebody to take a chance on him this summer and kind of cut your ties, cut your losses.
Real quickly before we go on to my question on Josh Jackson, I found interesting for one of our loyal listeners. Quickly on Bender, I wanted to ask you, what are the odds or percentage points you think that the Suns end up using Dragan Bender around the trade deadline to fill their point guard need or just get off his contract a little bit early?
It would just be a salary matcher, I think, at this point, because he does have a pretty big salary for, you know, the fact that he's not in the future plans. He still is somebody who he makes more money than Troy Daniels, who already is somebody that we've talked about using in that way. So that's the only way I see it happening.
Yeah, I agree. But from our loyal listener, like I was saying, Antelikos, he asked about Josh Jackson because he's actually a Candace fan. And he said, is Josh Jackson washed? As a KU fan, the difference is striking. Big difference was a high-level point guard play. He's probably talking about playmaking overall from Jackson at Kansas versus with Phoenix. How does Robert Sarver not see he's the problem?
We'll skip the last part. I think that's a podcast mini-series if we were to dive into Robert Sarver. I think with Jackson, though, I don't think he's washed because he's not even 22. But I think we've talked about it over and over. I think it's the most alarming thing about this season for him, knowing now that he has played so well the past few games, at least compared with the standard that he set for himself early in the year. He's not like he's been a, you know, 20 point a game guy, but at the same time, he's kind of done his job. I think the most alarming part is just that it took that complete cratering for him to rise up and kind of answer the call. There shouldn't have to be a call. You're a great, talented player, and you can be really good. That should be enough. That should be all of the, you know, motivation you need is you're playing on a team that really needs your talent and needs your production. And, you know, you hope that everybody can kind of motivate themselves that way. Now you take the added productivity that he's had. He's been really good the past few nights, so you take it. But you wish that he could be a little bit more self-motivated and not, you know, need to be a scorer and need to be kind of crushed before he can answer, you know, the call of really just buying into being a six-man, a defensive guy, an energy guy like he has been.
Yeah, that's the thing with Jackson, just consistency. But I wanted to ask you quickly as well on Jackson, because the Suns now have, I think, about 6 or so months to decide on Josh Jackson, my opinion, because his fourth-year team option, even though he's only in his second season, his third-year team option is already exercised before the season started at $7.1 million. But for his fourth-year option of $9 million, Brendan, what do you think about that so far? And do you think that Jackson, let's say he doesn't keep his consistency up and he craters back down to how he was earlier in the season, how early or quickly do these Suns have to decide about Josh Jackson, their long-term future? Because I think it has to be, I think, in the next few months, how he plays between now and April this year, because it's coming up on that time where the Suns have to make some decisions to improve this roster, and Josh Jackson either going to be a part of that or he's going to be used as a trade chip, I think, in the summer.
Yeah, I still don't think teams really value him at all. So I feel like for right now, you just kind of try to get whatever out of him that you can, try to develop him, teach him the good habits that he seems to kind of have caught on to the past few games, learn how to maximize him. I think as a playmaker, he still could be really, really important. I still see somewhat of an Andre Iguodala role for him if he reaches somewhere near his ceiling, kind of a modified ceiling, because I think the jumper, it's going to be a while if it ever comes for him. I think he could get to be somebody that could play that role. He's not going to be, you know, a starting level player on one of the best teams ever, like Iguodala became, but I think he could do something like that. And I think you just hope that he gets to that point in Phoenix here, because I don't think that you're going to get much for him. You're definitely not going to get relief to feel good about moving on from the number four pick. You know, he doesn't have that kind of value to be able to fetch a star level player like you would have hoped when you drafted him. So now I think you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to say. I think Mikal Bridges is that guy. If they ever want to get a star traded, he's going to be the one that has to go instead of Josh Jackson. But what I know you have a few questions left in your mailbag. What about what's left in yours? I only have one question left for me.
Yeah, we can go on in just a sec. Want to one last time tell you guys about the Locked On NBA show. Been urging you guys to listen to this for weeks now. I hope that you have, and I hope that you like what you're hearing. Go ahead and give them a subscription if you're already listening, if you've taken my advice and checked out what guys like Sam Amick and Ben Golliver are saying, what our fabulous hosts like Jake Madison or Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers have been saying in their usual shows. But if not, definitely go check that out. It's a great resource to stay up to date in little bite-sized snippets like we do here on Locked On Suns with what's going on across the entire league. Obviously, the Suns are not always the most exciting team when they make boneheaded decisions at point guard and some of the silly stuff that they like to do. But if you are keeping up with stuff across the league, or you want to keep up with it from a Suns perspective, from Markelle Fultz to Kevin Love, what's up with him? We haven't heard that name in a while. He's just out with injury recovering. If you want to hear about all that stuff, go check out Locked On NBA, the national show. Give them a subscription and rate and review them as well. All right, I will go with one last question of my own, and then we can get your last one. Kind of along the same lines as something we talked about earlier, but I think it does get into the coaching a little bit more. Is Igor going to be able to plug enough holes to start winning some of these close games? And if so, what trades or rotations is it going to take to start closing better? And that's from Josh Stockton at jstock_10. And to me, I think there's not an answer currently on the roster. I don't think there's really much that could be changed to really fix what's going wrong right now, because I think it's an overburden on Devin Booker, most of all. And I think it's just a lack of, you know, depth, a lack of secondary talent to carry bench units, to, you know, make big shots, to do just kind of anything else that Booker isn't able to do. It's kind of if he plays incredibly, the Suns have a shot at winning. Otherwise, it's pretty unlikely. And there's just not enough talent for Igor himself to be able to really do much.
I feel like some listeners are going to be a little mad that I'm saying this, but I feel like it's gotten to that point of the season where wins really shouldn't matter for this team. It should just be about like development that you kind of touched on your story this week, Brendan, where over the past 7-8 games, the Suns are now, instead of in the low 20s in net rating and offensive rating and defensive rating, they're in the high teens, the 18-19 range. So those are the slight improvements you should be looking for. I think it's not really going to translate to wins and losses this year. I've kind of come down off my prediction a little bit of 32 wins after this quarter of the season start. I think they're probably going to be more around 25, 27 wins, still get around top three, top four pick. But this is kind of setting up for, I think, a redo of this offseason where it should have gone well for them. If you get a top five pick and now you have 30-plus million in cap space again, you just have to get it right this time, and maybe next year is the time you do it. But I think asking about wins and losses with this team and if they can prove wins and losses, I think it's more about – like last year where you kept preaching development, development, development. I think it's the same thing again this year because DeAndre Ayton is more a project than we thought he was. And even though he's producing the box score numbers, and also Josh Jackson's a little bit behind, Devin Booker's taking a step forward like we all thought he would, but everyone else is still a little bit behind. And I think you get the extra top five pick, you take advantage of the $30 million in cap space, and then you start talking about wins and losses and turning a corner, because I think this team, unfortunately, is a year behind schedule.
Yeah, I think you're right. What is your last question?
For me, it's actually about DeAndre Ayton, and it's from A-Rex at 1-403-02329, and he asks, what do you expect out of DeAndre Ayton the rest of the season? And looking at stats real quickly, he's averaged 16.5 points, 10.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists on 61.5 field goal percentage, which would be the first time ever in NBA history that anyone's averaged 15, 10, and 2 while averaging over 60% shooting from the field. So Ayton's producing the box score numbers on a historic rate, Brendan. He's only averaging 0.9 blocks per game. His defense will obviously be an issue for the next few years, I think, just see grows into the anchor role on defense. But I think Ayton's living up to expectations so far, and I think that really there's not much else to say other than I think that he is a force offensively when he tries and actually gets the motor in there. I think the big thing with him is that you need to tap into his motor a little bit more as far as – and when he's actually into the game and he wants to get fed – he's a dominant force out there, and I want to see more of that in the last 50 or so games of the season.
I agree. I think along those same lines, to me, I mean, more specifically, just to kind of give one thing that I think would be important to watch for if people are kind of trying to track, like, what's real progress? Because it's tough with him. Like you said, he's being so productive, and I think outside looking in, you would think, it's a successful rookie year. And I think he has exceeded my expectations in a lot of different ways, just being able to actually translate those tools into what kind of looks like the making of a real NBA player. Even just to do that as a rookie and to have it be legit, I think is better than you could ask for a lot of guys, because we see so many flameouts in the draft. But at the same time, he needs to get to the line. That's probably the single most frustrating thing about watching him. Just to put it in perspective a little bit, free throw rate. So that's, you know, free throws compared to your field goal attempts, kind of a percentage of how many free throws you're taking compared to how many total shots you're taking. 23% for DeAndre Ayton, which doesn't seem terrible, but it's below Jamal Crawford, who is almost 40. It's below Josh Jackson, who, you know, he attacks the rim, so maybe he's somebody you might expect to be up there, but he's been so inefficient. And Ryan Anderson and Rashawn Holmes. So it's inexplicable for a guy who has that much of a physical advantage against almost every center in the league, or at least, you know, more of a ability to compete with those guys than you would expect from any rookie center, to be even worse than most guys at just even attempting free throws. And he can make them when he gets to the line. So that's one thing. I think that's going to help his game so much, to just keep defenders honest and also just up his own efficiency, score even better. Those are free points.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And you look at the Pacers game from earlier in the season, about a few days ago, he had 6 free throws attempts in the first quarter, and he didn't have a single one the rest of the game, which is kind of maddening overall. But there's so many games looking at his box score here, Brendan, where he's had 1 or 2 free throw attempts, no more than 4, really. He's only had more than three times in a game where he had 4 each time. But if you're not looking at the box score, Brian, let's play a game really quickly. And it involves Ayton's free throw attempts. How many times has DeAndre Ayton gotten to the line above 6 times this season, which means he's gone to the line above 3 times?
I would say it's probably 5 or less.
Oh, it's a lot less. It's a lot less.
Is it 1?
It's only 1, which is really bad for a 7-foot guy who's 250 pounds, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I just looked really quick to even put it in greater perspective. Marvin Bagley's getting to the line, and his free throw rate is 45.5%. Not only that, but Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter, and Marvin Bagley, all of the bigs taken in the top 10, have a higher free throw rate than Ayton. So that includes Jaren Jackson, who's about the rawest offensive player you could think of in a lot of ways, especially around the rim finishing. He couldn't even do that in college very well, let alone in the NBA, and he's getting to the line more frequently than Ayton. So he has a lot. He has a long way to go there to use his body a little bit better and get those easy points.
Yeah, I was just looking at another name really quickly, Mitchell Robinson. With him, he's one of the rawest guys in the draft, who we talked about a little bit before the pre-draft process. They're going to take like Luka Doncic instead of Ayton. His free throw rate's even higher than Ayton as well. So that kind of tells you how far away Ayton is from really creating for himself and getting to the line, which is kind of a small but concerning thing to monitor the rest of the season. But I think that's pretty much going to do it for our mailbag today. If there's anything else you want to hit on, Brendan.
Nope. We will we'll be at the live at the Magic game tomorrow night for our usual recap.
Alrighty, folks. Yeah, that will do it for today's episode. It'll be a fun matchup tomorrow. The Suns are 4-17 on the season. And if they don't win, I think this might be – I'll have to look this up before for our next episode. But if they go to 4-18, I think that might be one of the worst starts in Phoenix Suns franchise history for the first 22 games of the season. But I'll have to check in on that. But until then, folks, we'll be back with you guys tomorrow for our Magic recap.